All right, guys, welcome to the Broadcast.gg Office Hours Podcast. This is Mushu Beef. I'm joined today by Medic. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm pretty well, thanks, man. How are you?
Doing well as well. It's 11 a.m., but not going to lie, I woke up within the last hour. I don't know, I guess one of the perks of working on your own. Medic, you were doing play-by-play shoutcasting for Worlds this year, Worlds 2017 for League of Legends. And you did the play-in stages. But normally you do also the EU-LCS and Challenger Series as well, right?
Yeah, so I'm still freelance technically, so I just get brought in for day projects at Riot. But yeah, I did Challenger Series, both splits this year, and I did 4 weeks of the LCS in summer split.
Hey, awesome. Yeah, I mean, that's super cool. Like, that's the dream for so many people, right? And so many aspiring folks who want to get into shoutcasting are inspired by that and brought into esports because of the broadcasting. I know that was a story for myself. So, but what was it for you that got you into gaming or esports in general?
So actually, it's like I wasn't really a big gamer until I came to university. I played like FIFA and Pro Evolution Soccer with my dad and Tomb Raider and The Sims and, you know, all of these like bitty games. But I only really started playing online when I started at university. One of my housemates introduced me to League in my second year of med school. And then I got really into League. I really enjoyed it. It's really the only game I've ever played to a high caliber. I've tried like StarCraft and I played a little bit of World of Warcraft and stuff, but nothing major. So I guess it's just like, I really enjoyed the idea of competing against other people. And I really enjoyed playing fives as well, because my university had a fives team. So that was, I was going to say enjoyable again, because I can't think of another word right now. But yeah, it was a lot of fun to actually join up with a team and try and challenge other people.
Very cool. So was it like you guys had games versus other schools as well, or would you just 5Q?
So we 5Q'd for a while, but in the UK, there's a thing called the National University Esports League.
Oh, right.
It's like a bit like ULOL in the States, I guess.
Okay.
So yeah, we competed in that and tried to defeat our rival teams. We weren't very good, but we had a lot of fun.
Gotcha. Were these like also rival teams of like the traditional sports as well, or were they like just different schools that were now like really good at League?
Again, in the UK, there's a thing called Bucks, which is like a league table of all the different sports, like regular sports, amongst universities. And so it wasn't quite incorporated, but the idea was that you were challenging teams that you would challenge in football or in basketball or in hockey or whatever. So you were still part of the university rivalry, even if you weren't doing it in a conventional fashion.
Gotcha. Nice. Yeah, we had some people who are in NUEL as well. I think they just joined up and they're doing actually Overwatch casting. So it sounds like it's growing in terms of the different esports that it's covering, that they're doing in the tournament. All right, so yeah, you started in school playing League.
Yep.
And at what point did you say, like, I want to start casting?
I kind of fell into it, really. So I had a group of people that I'd scrim with. There were about 10 to 15 of us. And then we started having too many people just to do 5v5 scrims. And I said, oh, you know, I'll stream it. People can watch. We can, you know, rip into our friends. Probably got drunk the first time I did it, thinking, like, if I know myself. And so I streamed it and really enjoyed doing that. And then Summoner School, there's a subreddit called R Summoner School. They had like weekly gold tournaments and silver tournaments and whatever. So I started streaming those as well. And just kept doing it. Like, eventually there was a position open at a company called EGL, which I think is European Gaming League, but I can't quite remember that well. So I applied for that and got partnered up with my long-term casting partner, Kiernan Excoundrel Lowe, who does a lot of like UK scene stuff. And things just really extended from there. We kept casting together and I kept getting jobs. I don't know how, part-time, just able to work off my own back. And eventually it got to a point where I had to decide whether I wanted to keep casting or whether I wanted to continue being a doctor like long-term, and casting won out. So
nice. Wow. That's pretty cool. So I ever, in terms of getting started as well, the first time I was doing casting was like for Call of Duty, and I'd do free for all on all chat, but it was kind of to entertain friends. And so it's interesting to hear that was kind of your story as well.
I think a lot of casters are like, firstly, I think we're all quite narcissistic. We like to be the center of attention to some degree.
Yeah.
And part of it is like, we're kind of having a party when we cast. Like it's very like, you're trying to entertain your friends. You're trying to have a bit of fun. And that seems to be a way that a lot of people got started off, because you kind of just want to have a lot of fun talking about a game that you love. And if you can get paid to do that, then all the better.
That's really cool. So, I mean, it sounds like the UK scene, that there are opportunities to have gigs. Would you say that the sports scene in UK is pretty thriving right now?
I think like thriving is a strong term. I think it's in a very good spot, but like, I might be looking at it from a slightly jaded point of view as well, because like compared to the esports scene in from what I've heard from in the States, perhaps it is thriving. You know, we have consistent League of Legends events. We've got consistent Hearthstone events. There's Overwatch tournaments. There's three big LANs a year. Like there are a lot of opportunities for casters to stamp their mark. The issue always is that usually you have a couple of sort of key casters who are doing most of the events. So before me and Excoundrel, it was Stress and Pulse. We were very lucky that they kind of left the scene and went to Riot in Germany when we were starting the cast, because then we took over and started to get a lot of their jobs. And now that Excoundrel and I have left the scene, there are other guys sort of stepping into the breach, but you're still looking at the same four or five casters for League of Legends or for Hearthstone or for Overwatch or CSGO. I think like the UK has always been a good medium, a good like agar plate to culture casting talent. Like you look at like Joe Miller, D-Man, Stress, Pulse, Henry G, Odie Pixel.
Red Eye's like, you can English name too, it. Right?
Pardon?
Red Eye's English too, right?
Red Eye's English too. Yeah. Like I think you could quite easily pick out a couple, like Machine is English, a couple of good casters from every esport and say they're from the UK. The only one I couldn't think of at the moment is Overwatch, but I don't know Overwatch that well. So I only know like Monty Doa and Uber Shouts from Overwatch.
Yeah. To maybe an untrained ear, they'll be like, oh yeah, no, Uber's English. But like, no, he's Aussie.
Actually, I'm pretty sure he'd hit you if you told him that in person.
Yeah. He has a lot of reasons to, But yeah, that's pretty cool. So you say you're doing a lot of freelancing, and then for you getting to ULCS and now Worlds too, was it like just this kind of steady progression? Things just kept happening. You kept improving. How did that?
Yeah, I don't really know. I don't really understand how that happened, because I got CS at the start of the Challenger Series at the start of the year. About, I want to say it was like late January that they emailed me and said, oh, we want you to do Challenger Series this year. And I was like, okay, cool. That's, you know, that's amazing. I'd applied to the job. I'd applied to EU LCS Shoutcast, you know, the typical position that comes up on the Riot website. And I was like, yeah, that's really good. They wanted to fly me out to Berlin for the weekends and then fly me home. It was a great opportunity for me. So I was like, grand. And I did it. And then about halfway through the split, Quickshot was like, okay, so next split, we're thinking of bringing you on for a few EU LCS days. And I was like, okay, excellent. That's really cool. And the plan was to bring me on for the super weeks, the 4-day weeks. Mm-hmm. So I was like fortunate enough to get about 4 weeks of that. And then at the end of the split, they were like, oh, Medic, we want to give you a playoff spot. We want to give you the Misfits versus, who was it? Unicorns of Love? Yeah, Misfits versus Unicorns of Love quarterfinal. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. Like my long-term goal for the year had been to cast LCS, and now I'm casting a playoff in the LCS, which is just incredible. And then I think it was like week 10 of LCS or so. Trevor was like, I was at home, I was in Derby, and Trevor's got me on Skype and said, look, mate, I need to talk to you on Skype pretty urgently. And I was like, okay, cool. Got on Skype. And one of the first times I'd gone to Berlin, he and I, like, we'd gone on a night out, and I'd said to him, you know, I'd love to do Worlds. It'd be amazing to do Worlds. It'd be incredible. I think I can get to the sort of level where I could do it. And he brought up that conversation in the Skype call and then told me that they wanted me to do Worlds play-ins. And I just shouted, fuck yes, down the mic, which is probably not the most business-like interaction. But I don't know how it happened, in all honesty, because EU didn't put me forward. It was purely the NA office coming and saying, we need another play-by-play. Can Medic do it?
Gotcha. Sounds like it was a night out in Berlin that did it, to be honest. looking back on it.
Pretty sure that's how it works. Like, that's how a lot of esports works, though.
Yeah,
it's about being yourself the entire time, and people respond to that, I guess, to some degree.
Yeah,
I still don't know how it happened, because I did 4 weeks of LCS and I'm a freelancer and I got to do Worlds, and that's basically unheard of. So,
yeah, I mean, I actually I don't really watch as much ULCS, so I hadn't seen your game going into Worlds, but I was like, wait, who is this guy?
And that was the general reception, because I you look at people like Achilleos or Pulse or Fish, or there's a bunch of people who I would put before me personally.
Gotcha.
I'm just very lucky to get the opportunity.
Gotcha. Well, I'm glad the opportunity and your preparation was there and to make that happen. But cool. So yeah, I mean, that's a really cool story, and I think it's always fun to hear people's origin stories. I think no matter, even if it's really cookie cutter, there's always a little bit of a twist, right? Because someone has to earn it, especially for something that's so desired or such so high profile. So that's really awesome.
I'm trying to work out what cookie cutter for esports is. It's kind of like I was doing this degree course and then realized I don't like that degree, so now I'm in esports.
Yeah, you're right. There is no cookie cutter. There's only the rolling pin, and you're tearing your shape out. I guess for other industries, it's I came from an engineering background, and I would do a lot of questions with around that to people that I was talking to. You hear more about the person. You learn more about like who they are and what they find is important, because that's the thing that drove them to where they are now.
Yeah.
So we were doing some texting back and forth about, okay, what is going to be topic for Medic? Like, obviously you're super well-rounded, and I think we're even talking before
Am I super well-rounded? I would very much disagree with you there, okay. But thank you for the compliment.
Yeah, I'm not trying to pump your tires, but like, obviously if you're being chosen for ULCS and then the Worlds, as well, you understand what you needed to understand. But I think in particular, listening to your casts at Worlds, I really enjoyed how creative you were during your calls, especially as the play-by-play caster. But then in addition, different levels of energy that you had through the team fight. So I guess before we even get to that, you mentioned you want to talk about what you think the role of a caster is.
Okay, yeah. So this is something that came up a lot of Worlds, because you've got a bunch of different, like, especially play-by-play. So I'm a play-by-play. That's what I know. So that's probably what I'll focus on when this discussion happens, or as we discuss things. We had a lot of different play-by-plays coming into the same space and having to work out exactly how we wanted to lead the story. And even then, it was it's a difference of opinion as to exactly what a play-by-play should be doing and how you represent the teams and the broadcast as a caster yourself. So my main thought coming into it was that as a caster, people should know who you are when you're casting a game, and they should be able to identify, if you give them a 30-second clip of me casting, I think people should be able to identify that that's me casting, because there should be some personal touch, some sort of a catchphrase or a specific way that I talk or an intonation or even just my accent that people will recognize and be able to associate with the game and with the teams that are playing. However, talking to some of the casters, they were saying, no, it's not about you at all. Like, people shouldn't be able to identify the fact that you're casting it. They shouldn't care that it's you casting it. It should be completely about the teams and completely about how the teams are interacting with each other and how the game status. And I can understand that as a point of view. I can understand the idea that you shouldn't distract from the game, but I disagree with the fact that you shouldn't put your own personal touch on the game, because part of entertaining and part of being a broadcaster is being able to affect the way that people experience the game with your own personal... It's almost your own personal spice. So, you know, your Captain Flowers has got the hard spice. He's got the jalapenos, he's got the chilies, he puts it on, sprinkles some Captain Flowers deliciousness across this bolognese or, I don't know, whatever you're eating. Do you guys have bolognese in the States?
Really good. We do, but I don't think anyone knows how to say it correctly.
Chili. chili. We'll say across the chili, right?
Yeah.
So you're making this delicious chili, and Captain Flowers comes along and says, look, guys, we're going to add some jalapeno spices. We're going to add some strong individual calls. He has like big spacing between his calls as well. So he'll say, like if you, the SKT gaming groups where they came back against EDG.
Oh, yeah.
And it was the Rakan combo into the Orianna Shockwave. He has like a 3 second, well, it's probably not 3 seconds, like a 2 second space before he actually says anything about that play. And that's Captain Flowers, you know, it's really punchy, but it's like bit by bit. Whereas I'm more of like a paprika mixed with a tiny bit of spice. So every now and again, I'll have this like strong, powerful call. But most of the time, it's kind of like it's insidious. It's working its way in the background and you can feel it slowly building up and building up and building up and building up. And then you hit a crescendo and then you come back down. And I think the ability for people to listen to a cast and know it's you actually can get them more excited about fights. Yeah, so I think that's the big thing that I'm kind of working on at the moment, and I think it's really important, is discovering how you make the game more exciting, but being able to put your unique touch on the game as well without distracting from the game. The issue is, and this is the reason that I know some people say people shouldn't know it's you casting, is that if you are a bigger name than the players, in inverted commas, you can make it about yourself instead of making it about the players, which is not what we want. You know, the whole idea of casting is to big up the players, to show why the game is entertaining, to show why these players are important, rather than to show why you yourself are important. And it's something that I think... So I've never talked to Ibai, who is a Spanish caster. He's one of the best known non-English casters in the world, in my opinion. I've never talked to him, and I don't know him as a person. But when I see comments on Reddit about him, it's not about the play. It's about how good Ibai was at casting that play and how rapidly he cast it. Now, I trust that he is trying to entertain as much as possible with the game, but that's not what I think you should have in that moment. If a clip goes up on Reddit about my casting, I want it to be, look at this incredible play, and then people in the comments or something are like, oh, Medic cast that really well. I don't want it to be like, listen to this incredible cast from Medic, and then people in the comments be like, oh, but look at the engage from Wolf on Rakan. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
to you?
No, that makes perfect sense. And I think firstly, it's what makes it great is that there is no right answer, right?
Exactly, 100%.
Right, yeah. And it's about the interpretation and your intent. What makes it right is the direction of production group, right? And where what you guys are, or maybe just like the casters, right? Like what's the narrative? Like, well, how do we want to position our broadcast? How do we want to entertain people?
Yeah. I think there's a big difference between League and CS:GO there as well. I think that's it's quite an obvious comparison in my opinion. League, where what I've seen and what I've experienced in League, it's much more about analyzing the game and analyzing the players and then talking about that. Whereas in CS:GO, if you listen to a CS:GO analyst desk, especially if Thorin's there, especially if Richard Lewis is there, there's a lot more about how the analysts interact with each other and less about exactly how the game state is and how the players are interacting with each other. I think it's like, I don't think either is... Yeah, I do think one is better, but that is a personal opinion. I think that's important to stress here. I'm not saying that CS:GO analysts are bad. Yeah. I'm just saying, to me, I don't think that's how you should run an analyst desk. I think you should run it more like Dash runs it, which is, okay, Crumbs, push you on that point. I want you to explain the point, not trying to banter with Crumbs about that.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. And I've always been wondering too, is there, you're talking about there's these different opinions and even between different esports, there's different styles. Do you think overarching for the current productions that are happening, there is like a goal that everyone is hitting? Like say, we want to entertain our fans, or it's like we want to educate our fans, or I don't know if you can generalize it to the point where you feel that despite all the different opinions, everyone's working towards the same thing.
Do you mean in esports generally?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think like, I think the best metric for whether casters and broadcasters are doing the right thing is esports growing and is esports viewership growing? And you look at it like year on year, there were more people watching and attending esports events, and there were more esports events, and that has to be a good thing. Now, whether that is purely due to the casters or whether that's due to, you know, increased internet and more people getting into the scene and, you know, universities picking up esports courses, that's obviously there is a multifactorial course. But I think that generally in esports at the moment, we are continuing to push towards a golden age of esports casting. I don't think we're there yet. I think there's still room for improvement. But yeah, I definitely think that there is a unified goal in the fact that we want to make esports seem less like something that only people who live in their mother's basement can do, and more like something everyone can do. Because like, I've got a non-esports girlfriend, right? She doesn't follow League, she doesn't follow CSGO, she doesn't play computer games. The closest she got to computer games is playing like Heyday on her phone. That's it. But when I started off, she was like, oh, you know, this can't be a big thing. It can only be people who are, you know, white males in their teens to 20s who are overweight because they don't go outside. It can't be held in big arenas. It can't be this. It can't be that. And it's about educating people like that, that actually it is a world, and it's a group of people who are unified in something they enjoy. So yeah, I think, like, coming back to your original question, sorry, casting is definitely moving in the right direction and continues to do so because of the work that people have done in the past. I think it's important to respect the work that people like, I mean, you go all the way back to Tasteless and Artosis, and you look at the original StarCraft casters, and then you move forward through Red Eye and through Joe Miller and D-Man and all of these people who put an immense amount of effort into building up esports. And now we're hitting a new level where we're starting to challenge the NBA finals and the NFL finals, and probably not near actually hitting those highs, but we're continuing to actually move into more mainstream.
Yeah, but you look at the growth, right, of it, and, you know, understanding that these traditional sports have been around for so long, and
exactly
doing a lot of thinking, like, just on my side as well, like, what's the future of esports? And I think what the broadcasts are doing, what these giant productions are doing, is telling the story of, why should I even care about this game? Why should I care about these people who can keyboard and mouse so well?
Exactly. And I think there's different ways of doing that as well. And you can see the comparison in the ways of doing it. Because League is much more professional. Let's be like ESPN. Let's be, you know, true. Every guy's in a suit and tie. We have these analyst desks. We have integrated graphics. We've got all of this cool stuff, which is more that's more like trying to show that it is a sport by making it look like a sport. Whereas CSGO is more like, look, we have a lot of fun. They still have a professional aspect, but it's more, look, we're a bunch of guys bantering about this, presenting a sport to you. And then you've got things like Rocket League and Clash and Vainglory and all these, and Overwatch and Dota, which are all on various positions on that spectrum, on that scale of bantering with a bunch of mates and getting drunk together, to we're incredibly professional, we want to be like traditional sports. I think there's a good balance to be found in the middle. I do wonder sometimes if when I interviewed to do LCS, I said I don't think there's enough playfulness in, especially in EU LCS. But that's sort of we've moved more towards playful with like Quickshot and Deficio wearing clown outfits and messing around a bit more. So,
and it depends on your profession.
I think there's definitely a balance.
Yeah, I guess they're not professional clowns per se, but
mate, Quickshot's definitely a professional clown. 100%.
Oh yeah, man, that GIF. Whenever people mention Quickshot and Deficio, I think of the GIF. Yeah, the old slap.
I want to get to that stage. Like, I want to get to a point where people, like, I think Vedius and I have a very good casting duo anyway, and I think we can really develop it if we work together in the future. I want to get to the stage where people are like, oh, yeah, the Vedius medic gif. Oh, baby. It's probably going to be me picking him up or something. What's going to happen.
I was going to say, are you the slapper, the slappy? But maybe it sounds like you want to take a different direction.
See, I think I enjoy both ways.
Oh, okay.
I think I'm a little bit. I can swing. It's fine.
Sorry. GIFs can be longer, you know, and still be viral. So,
I also think if I slap Vedius, he might collapse. So. He's a very small human being.
Fly into the wall, the other side.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I guess that covers it for like what kind of the roller coaster is. Interesting going into more about is that direction of the professionalism taken too far? I definitely see that it's something that people kind of have as a baseline. I even had someone mention to me the other day, they're like, yeah, I don't really like how they dress up in all in suits and everything, like trying to be like ESPN, trying to be like this.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily the point. Like, it's to have a baseline to show that you're taking this seriously and that you should care about it and not just like, yeah, we're just hanging out and chilling. And
yeah, I think if I were to suggest things, especially to newer casters, I'd err on the side of professional and then add spice where you can. Because I've seen many a caster be too playful on a cast and listen to him with people, and they're just like, nah, it's too playful. Like, he said words that you shouldn't use. He made statements you shouldn't make. And it's like, the reason that Trevor and DeFicio can make a joke about a fake taxi on stream is that they have 5 years each of casting professionally and rigidly behind them. If they didn't have that, you wouldn't be able to make a joke about a fake taxi on stream, because people would be like, why are they referencing porn? Which is exactly what that was, by the way.
Wow. Okay.
Have you heard that call?
No, I haven't.
Okay. So in EULCS, there's a player called Faxi who plays for Rocket, and he plays Gnar, and it's called his Faxi Taxi, because when he plays Gnar, he tends to like carry the team. And so he teleported into the side of a fight, and Quickshot is like, the Faxi Taxi's on its way, and then he doesn't get the engage, and DeFicio goes, yeah, it was a fake taxi that time. Oh. And like, it's so obviously a reference to porn.
Okay. But
because they've been like, it's so funny. I would recommend trying to find it if you can, because yeah, it's very funny.
But
the reason
it.
You can make jokes like that, and the reason you can wear clown masks, and the reason you can slap someone's ass, is because you have developed a reputation for being a good caster and for being professional.
Yeah, and that's what everyone's working towards.
Exactly.
Being able to do that. Okay, so but you mentioned for earlier casters, you've seen some situation where people are too playful. Do you have any examples like that come to mind for, because I won't be able to say a list of, go ahead.
Yeah, I think the key example that always sticks out in my mind is I was watching a watching a color caster, and he was just talking with his play-by-play, and there's obviously a good relationship between him and the play-by-play, and the play-by-play makes a point about, I don't know, some micro interaction, and the color goes, nah, mate, that's wrong. This is what's right. It's okay that you got that wrong, because you're, and I don't like using this word, but I'm going to use it because that's what he said. He said, because you're retarded. Okay. And it's like, you don't say that. You don't say that on cast.
Yeah.
Firstly, you should never use words like that on cast, right?
Yeah.
Secondly, you shouldn't be that playful when you're trying to establish a name for yourself. That's what I was saying about the whole DeFicio thing. Like, DeFicio was, he came in, he wasn't that respected amongst the community because of his accent. He put a huge amount of work into being the best caster he could be, and now he can make jokes that are a little bit closer to the line because he's established that professional relationship. It's like, when I first came in, my first 4, 5, 6 casts were all as professional as I could make them, and now I add a little bit of joking in. Now I make the, like, when I do an interview, I'll add a little joke about EU being better than NA, or I'll add a little thing here or there, because I've started to establish the fact that people can respect what I say. I still don't think I'm anywhere near, like nowhere near DeFicio or Quickshot level, but I'm at a point where I can kind of gauge what jokes I can make.
Gotcha. And it sounds like that's, so it's like you're approaching that line of where you want to be, but yeah, instead of starting in on the side that's too playful, you're starting from the side that's more conservative, yeah, and you're kind of
On the side of being conservative. Yeah. And then as you develop a reputation, you can move towards playful, because I think a lot of people, especially, will look up to Thorin or Richard Lewis and say, oh, you know, they do that, why can't I do that? And the answer is because they've established themselves in their business. If you come in bantering and being savage to everyone, and then you're wrong, even if you're right, people are going to think you're a bit of a dick. So just don't be a dick. It's my rule of thumb.
Yeah, and I think maybe one thing that's not, that pairs with that as well, is it's also the experience too, where you are able to have that antenna and understand and see the signals of, okay, this is too far or not.
And yeah,
the more time in the cast, just more experience in that situation,
and you work that out more and more as you go along. So when TSM got knocked out of groups this last week, rest in pieces TSM, obviously, I had a meme prepared, right? And I was thinking in my, like, I was thinking in my head, can I tweet this meme? Can I put that out there? The reason, so I usually, I wouldn't do it usually, because it was a little bit on edge. It's mocking TSM fans, right? Sure. And it was the shouting seagull, where the second half of it is just the seagull shouting all the excuses about why TSM locked, you know, they're jet lagged, it was cold on stage, Bjergsen wasn't allowed to carry, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the only reason I tweeted it was because I'm not at Worlds at the moment, because I felt like I can be a little bit more on, I can be a little bit closer to the line because I'm not working the event. Because if I was, the next time I come on and say something about TSM, people would be like, oh, Medic's just anti-TSM. You know, he just doesn't like TSM. And even then, I was still very much on edge as to whether I should tweet something like that. Because you are representative of the company, even like at the moment. I'm not, because I'm freelance, but still.
Yeah.
And the only reason I think it was okay is Quickshot retweeted me. So I know that he's comfortable with that sort of level of joking. And I didn't I didn't shit on TSM. It was, in my opinion, it was a sarcastic take on TSM fans who are dicks a lot of the time.
Yeah. So. No, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And I feel like that's something that'll always be the case, where you're always trying to understand, okay, like, what is it not okay?
So, that's it. Like, all it takes is one fuck up to ruin your career. That's what we are. We're entertainers. And you go into every cast thinking about that, and you should. It should be in your mind. You should say before every cast, I can't fuck up because it will screw my career. I swore on Challenger Series, and I immediately after it, I like messaged Quickshot and I messaged a couple of people and just like, I'm really sorry, won't happen again. And they were like, yep, it's fine, we don't mind. But you have to come in with that humility that you know that one mistake could cost you your job.
Yeah, and that you're not hot shit.
Yeah, you're not hot shit.
Blitz Esports interview.
That was a good interview. I enjoyed that interview.
All right. So the other thing we want to talk about was passing the team fight. Before I was mentioning the elements that I enjoyed about your casting and what made it super entertaining. For you, how do you approach team fight casting?
Okay. So this is like something that I've obviously, as a play-by-play, you think about quite a lot. When I started off, I was very much an auctioneer caster, which is, I don't know if other people use that term. It's what people would call rap god, but it's without the refinement. So it was, I will say everything I see on the screen. I will use all the ability names I can. And I will just like say every single thing that happens, because I want to, it's like imagining that everyone's watching on the radio and you want to tell them everything. And that is an okay way to start if you're willing to refine from there, because if you don't refine from there, it becomes an information overload and it becomes very difficult, especially for non-native English speakers, to understand what you're saying. So what I do now is I kind of separate the game into a few different portions, and then I change the way that I cast teamfights for each individual portion. So starting up early in the game, say up to 10 minutes or so, when you're still in a laning phase, I'm much more likely to say everything that happens in a fight, because it's more likely to be skirmishes. It's only going to be two or three people there. Probably someone's going to die pretty rapidly. So what I would do is I'd have a low, slow start. So I'd be quite quiet. I'd be like, oh, Sejuani is coming in for the gank here, looking to jump across the wall, Arctic Assault, da-da-da-da-da. And then like, I don't have anything in front of me, so I can't cast. But then you build up into the fight itself. Peak at about probably a 7 or an 8 in terms of volume and in terms of excitement, and then come down after the fight finishes. So that's like 0 to 10 minutes. And then 10 to 20 minutes or 10 to 25, when you're looking at more 4v4s, 5v5 skirmishes around dragons or rift heralds, that's where you want to build a little bit more of the flow of the fight. So you're looking more at trying to tell the audience which team is beginning to win these fights more and which team should be winning these fights more. So if you have a team with established river control, you're saying, oh, well, blue side have established river control here, and we're going to see a bit of pressure, a bit of a poke, a bit of a prod from the red team. You're not actually saying what they're doing. Well, you are saying what they're doing, but you're not saying exactly how they're doing what they're doing. It's more about developing the flow of the fight. And then when you get into late game, it's more of a, you kind of have to decide how you want to go with it, because sometimes you do have rap god moments, and those can be some of the best moments. So you look at Quickshot's cast this last week that I think hit the front page of Reddit, people saying, oh, Quickshot's the best caster in the history of esports. which, by the way, he's probably challenging for one of the best casters, mm-hmm. especially in the history of League of Legends, but yep. that's a separate point. You have this idea where you want to have a bit of flow. You want to start off at like a 3 or a 4, depending on sort of the state of the game. And then you want to develop it up towards an 8 or a 9, and you're starting to get a little bit more rapid. But then you want to bring it back down because the team fights tend to be longer. So you bring it back down as the front lines disengage, or as you have a big ultimate used. And then you accelerate up to a 10, and then you bring it back down. And it's this idea of almost using, it's almost like a sine wave, but it's kind of like increasing, stepping up in intensity each time you come down. The risk with it is, if you don't practice it that much, and then something I'm still working on, is that you hard reset. And what I mean by hard reset is I go, oh, they're going in for the fight, here we go, Tristana's going to jump into the middle of them, and then you have to just like hard stop yourself and restart from like another from a 3, and that really breaks up the flow of the fight. It can work if you do it effectively, but you don't want to be doing that too often. You want to like bring the audience down with you and then restart it, because that's how you keep the idea that there's continuous action. You keep the idea that it's this ebb and flow between the two teams. If you hard reset, it feels like you're almost casting a new fight each time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so let me see if I understand correctly. You're saying you want it to be a sine wave where it hits a peak and comes down, and not like a drop off, sudden drop off.
Yeah, there's a medical term called relapsing remitting, which I don't know like an easy way to describe it. But if you imagine you've got a 0 to 10 y axis, right?
Sure.
And then you have an x axis that's over time, right?
Right.
I want to start off at a 1. I want to slowly go up to a 5, right? I then want to slowly come down to a 3. And then I want to go up to a 7 and come down to a 5. And then I want to go up to a 10 and come down to a 6. And then if the team fight slows down a little bit, I can slowly bring it down to a 3 again and then accelerate as the team fight varies. So it's like waves hitting a shore, that it's the tide's moving in bit by bit, but you never want it to like really peak without having a build up towards it. Climbing a hill. Slowly climb the hill, hit the top, and then come back down. Sometimes you will have an immediate peak. So if there's just a massive wombo combo, you just have to peak into the wombo combo. But even then, I feel that you should be able to build up to it to some degree, because you should anticipate the play before it happens.
Okay. You know, that, I think that makes a lot of sense. So why do you feel that's important? I think you touched on it briefly, but you can expand on that.
Yeah. So I think the best way to think about it is, if you think of a story, and we've got these 10 players in the story, and I tell you, just at the start of the novel, these 5 guys shot these 5 guys. You don't have any context. You don't have any idea why that's happened. You don't know who the 5 guys were. You don't care about them. Whereas if I slowly characterize those 5 guys for 3 chapters, and then say, oh, and now the blue side decided to go into the red side's territory, and now they're looking to fight the red side, and now they've shot 2 of the red side, and now the mother of the red side is coming out, and she's got involved in the action, and all of this is happening. It develops this story for the teams that is a lot more intriguing and a lot more exciting than if you just tell me that this team's killed this team, and you tell me it rapidly. And part of what you can do is, with your color caster, you establish the idea of how a team wins. So if I say to Vedius, how does red team win this? And he says, with a big team fight. Whenever I see red team grouping up, I'm going to say, Vedius, is this the team fight? And that's you're building into the cast already. And you're setting an expectation for your audience. And then I can slowly build up towards that expectation. And no one is surprised by it. But that creates more entertainment, because people are like, this is important. I know this is important because Medic and Vedius have told me that this is going to be really important. And you can kind of do that even if you haven't set the expectation, just by building up into the fight. Because if everything is a 10 in terms of volume, in terms of excitement, then nothing becomes important because everything is the same level. Whereas if something is a 3 and something is an 8 and something is a 4 and something is a 10, then you know where you should be paying attention, and you know what is exciting and what will change the game state.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think one thing that I'm hearing a lot from different people about casting is that you want to set the expectation to the audience, and so that people know what to look for, and that arguably some folks have even mentioned like that they believe that's what the caster's job is, of course, to entertain, but then also be that educated eye and voice to allow you to watch maybe more casually, or allow you to, it just deepens the experience more.
And I agree with that. I think a big part of the caster's job is to set the expectation for a game and to tell teams when they, tell audience members when they should be excited and when they should be anticipating action. Because a lot of our viewers are casual viewers, and a lot of people will have it on their second monitor or have it in a position where they don't pay active attention to it. So like I know I've had times where, especially for groups, because I've been incredible, like it's been really early in the morning here and I've been up for hours, I will be doing something else on my first monitor, and then I'll hear like Atlas going off, not Atlas, Pastry Time going off on one, and I'll be like, oh, I need to pay attention because Pastry Time is really excited about this, so I need to be really excited about this. Whereas if he's been 10 the entire time, I don't know what I need to be excited about.
Yeah, shoutcasting does not equal shouting all the time.
Yeah, and I think that's something that is difficult to learn, but and difficult to put into practice, because I shouted a lot of Worlds. That was like that's one of my main disappointments with my Worlds cast, was that I shouted too much.
Do you feel like you understand like now why it happened?
Yes. I think I should have been more cognizant that it was going to happen coming in. I thought that I would be able to control my nerves in the situation, but I definitely got too excited by the whole thing. And because it was really early in the morning as well, I probably didn't establish a good position coming into it. Because when I did EULCS for the first time, I'd established a lot of stuff with DeFisher that I was like, look, I want you to lead me here. I want you to talk about this. I want you to be willing to do this, et cetera, et cetera. And it really helped me not be as shit as I could have been. Whereas here, first time I've ever worked with Zyrene, I didn't establish the things I'd usually establish before a cast, and I know that let me down a little bit. But people have said that they think I did a really good job, and I really appreciate the compliments. I think in one of the Blitz interviews, we talked about being hypercritical. I'm definitely hypercritical of myself, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I think you just need to be, as a caster, you have to be willing to accept compliments when they happen, because they don't always happen.
Yeah, I mean, I'd even argue that that's a good thing. Well, look, if I'm working with someone who's hypercritical of themselves and yet still perform at a high level, I mean, that's the best of both worlds, right? You would take one in replacement of the other.
I think there's a risk, though. I think, like, especially I know for myself, if I come out of a cast and I don't think I've done well, or you always focus on the negatives, right? So I focus on these two team fights I messed up, or this one time I stumbled because I tried to say something too funny in the moment. Like, I've done it a lot of times where I try and be too clever with the words I'm using, or with like I try and make a joke about how the unicorns were a mythical beast and they've been slayed by this non-mythical beast Splice, and it's like that's not funny. They like it's not funny though.
Okay,
like,
I won't laugh
in the moment. It's not that funny. Because I don't know. Maybe it is funny. Maybe I'm just being like super hypercritical of myself. But I will focus on the negatives there, and I will come out feeling bad about the cast. Whereas you shouldn't do that. You should come out. Should immediately look at the positives and then come back and criticize the negatives, or write down the negatives on a bit of paper, say, I'm going to leave that. I will VOD review in the future. Because otherwise, you'll come out of every cast feeling like shit, and that will play on your mind. And you won't want to cast again because you'll feel like shit. And you'll be like, oh, when I cast, I feel like shit at the end. So yeah, because you're being too critical of yourself.
Gotcha. Because that's why there's always the good news, bad news rule.
Yeah.
Keep your mentality.
The criticism sandwich.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no, I think I laughed because of the absurdity of it just now.
Exactly. I mean, I shouldn't have said that's not funny.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the thing. Like, I was casting, it was a game-ending team fight, and I remember saying the mythical beast has been slain by the non-mythical beast or something. And it's like, does that actually contribute anything to the cast? And the answer is no. I was trying to be too clever.
Okay.
But you see how that's all I remember about that cast. Yeah. I don't remember anything I did well. I just remember the fact that I fucked that up at the end.
Gotcha. But yeah, I like definitely when you're talking about that, I was like, man, I wonder what his feedback is trying to do all these puns. And even now, like sometimes the puns will just fall flat, but then you're expecting it and you're
yeah,
he tried like, oh, it's Freak, you know.
But there's an idea behind puns that it's there's actually studies behind like especially, you know, Christmas cracker jokes where they're like deliberately bad. So the whole idea is that it's not you as the person who's told the joke, and then half people like it, half the people don't like it. So half the people like you and half the people don't like you because you were the one who told the joke. Mm-hmm. It's all of you hating the joke. And so it's this idea of community against the joke. So if Freak's willing to be the punching bag of the joke, then he actually builds this sense of camaraderie amongst the community. That's like super high level psychoanalysis, and probably it doesn't work like that in reality, but that is the idea behind super bad puns.
Okay. Huh.
Yeah.
Never thought about that that way. Okay, so we have an example of one of the team fights that I clipped from. This is actually from the rebroadcast, but for the people listening to the recording, you'll hear the audio as well.
You see Japone, he hasn't had much in terms of engage. Is this it here?
Quickness jumps in, here comes the Galio as well, the knockback. That's a Janna, they're trying to catch up.
Got
the kill pattern gets it, and there's the taunt as well. HKA are getting decimated, double for the Tristana. Frozen caught up towards the side, mission eventually
that's
taken
three.
Down. It's three for pattern, he's looking for more, he's looking for four. Can he get the Penta? Rivis locks him up, it's 3v2, but Unify can pound down from the side here. Unify's gonna get one, not quite the quadra for pattern. Crits to jump in. It is a quadra and an ace for Fenerbahce.
And they're going to be able to
Yeah, so
I still get tilted by saying Fenerbahce, by the way. 1907 Fenerbahce. 1907 Fenerbahce.
What? Like nine syllables, right? 1907.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll say it for another time, but that's interesting. I don't know if you have any statements on
like,
that.
To me, if the team wants to be called that, I will try my best to call the team.
Yeah.
I think that there was a lot of backlash when on day one I didn't do it as often as I could have done. Or like we as casters didn't do it as often as we could have done. And I feel that was a little bit unwarranted. But if TSM wanted to be called Team Solo Mid, I would try and call them Team Solo Mid as many times as possible. It's the team's prerogative. It's like sponsor shoutouts. I have no qualms in doing sponsor shoutouts because it's part of the job. It's part of the broadcast.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay, well, yeah. It was just kind of funny. I saw a bunch of tweets like flying around, like, wait, this is like nine syllables. I'm like, hey, I have to take so much time
so
to say
long.
That. But
we had those discussions in Story Meet as well. It was something amongst the casters.
So, for this team fight, what did you think? Well, we can start off the good, right? What did you think went well as part of this clip?
So I think like the general call and the general level of hype is relatively good. You can tell, like we talked about, that having the flow later on in team fights. That's what was happening here. So it wasn't. I rarely said actually exactly what was happening. I said they're looking for the Janna. Oh, the Tristana's got a double. Now they're jumping in, jumping out. HKA are getting decimated. I quite like that style of casting because I don't think you have to say the exact abilities and stuff that are happening. If it's a big ability, then it can help. But I quite like the general flow of this fight overall. Going on to the negatives, because that's my field of expertise.
Okay.
I listen to it back now, and I don't like the reset I do with the Tristana's got the double. I think that's pretty poor. It loses the flow. It's almost a hard reset rather than just a soft reset. And then I think I like the call of he's looking for more, he's looking for four. I think that's the first time I've ever done that call, so I was quite proud
very
of
nice,
that.
Very nice.
Oh, thank you. I don't like the immediate aftermath where I say he doesn't get the quadra, because I should be more excited about the fact they've got another kill than the fact that I shouldn't be disappointed that Tristana didn't get it. If she gets the quadra and then doesn't get the Penta, you can be a little bit disappointed in like a joking way there because it's like, oh, you could have had the Penta pattern. What are you doing? And I'm pretty sure pattern did get a Penta this world. But you shouldn't be, in my opinion, you shouldn't be over anticipating what could happen, and that is a weakness I have, where I expect something to happen, so I'll call it, and then if it doesn't happen, I sound really off because it hasn't happened.
Okay, interesting. So, because there's also like the trying to set up for like a certain expectation. So, is there a difference there between what you just said, like setting a call that doesn't actually happen versus setting an expectation that could happen?
Yeah, I think so. The big difference to me is when you set an expectation, it's about developing the overarching story of how team fights are likely to go. So if I say this team has a wombo combo composition, I'll say we're looking for the wombo combo coming into this fight. But if I'd said, oh, the Tristana's going to die here, and then she doesn't die, I'm anticipating the action. I'm not expecting something to happen. I've well, I am expecting it to happen, but that to me, the comparison is an expectation is usually established a few minutes beforehand and then referenced, whereas an anticipation is I've said it's happening and then it doesn't happen. And that's bad. So what I used to do a lot was I'd say, Tristana's going to die. No, she doesn't quite die. Mm. And you're kind of interrupting yourself and correcting yourself, which I think is bad, personally.
Gotcha. So it sounds like a big part of that, too, is the is there a word for like how absolute something is? The absoluteness?
I guess so. I know what you mean, though. Definitiveness.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. Whether it's set in stone that something's going to happen or whether it's a possibility it doesn't. Because there are times when it's like, I remember a call from Dracos, and it was a Unicorns of Love game versus, I think it was Misfits, I can't remember exactly, but there's a Fiora on like 100 HP. A Thresh walks up to her, flays her, and ignites her. And Dracos is like, well, Fiora's dead now. Visichachi's died. And then she outplays the fuck out of the Thresh. Like, ults him, gets the Vital Procs off, heals up through the Ignite, gets the kill. And that's cool. Like, he's expected her to die, and he said that. But then he gets incredibly surprised by the fact that Chachi just totally outplays this Thresh. And that's, to some degree, that's okay. I just don't think you should do it in a big team fight because you stumble. When you're correcting yourself, you cause yourself to stumble, and that loses the flow, that ebb and flow that we talked about.
I see. Sounds like it's like you have this idea of the flow that you want to maintain, and there's certain things that you can choose to talk about or ways that you're saying it that will like increase your confidence that you can maintain that flow, as opposed to certain things might bog you down or might trip you up. One of these being saying something that is definitive. This person's gonna die.
I think it's like. There's a degree to which a big spike in that flow is good. Like if you get surprised by something, that's really cool. Cause it's like you have this, you're flowing, everyone's expecting something to go one way and then it goes another. And you have this big spike in energy and power. But I don't think you should be the one causing that big spike. The play should cause that big spike rather than you having to correct yourself, causing this like almost turbulent water.
Mm-hmm.
In this wavy ebb and flow. I've got that metaphor is so screwed. Like, it's just all over the place. So I think generally, like overall, I want to just, I want to become a better caster. And I think the main thing for me at the moment is narrative and developing hero stories for some of our players. I think like EU especially has had this propensity towards being analytical. So like, say if there's a big shockwave play, we'll break down exactly, you know, how Power of Evil positioned to get that great shockwave, instead of being like, Power of Evil, whenever Misfits want him to carry, he will carry, and he makes plays like this time and time again. That I think that's a big difference between NA and EU to a degree as well, because NA will say that, whereas EU will be like, look at his positioning here, he placed the shockwave, he had vision control, what great play from Power of Evil. And it's a different impetus where you put it. So that's my big goal at the moment, is to change the way that I almost change the way I cast, to make it more about how great the players are and less about the minutiae of the plays, because I know my colors will do that. Like EU colors are great at analyzing the game, so they'll break down the play. I just need to make the players look good.
Yeah, no, I think that's really great. So I think we have a good idea of navigating the team fight. Some of the big takeaways I have are that you're prioritizing this flow, right, of how you want the team fight to go, and then within that you don't want a hard reset. It should be this overall, this kind of this rising sine wave, right, where eventually it hits this peak, and then and making sure that you're keeping some variety so that when it really is the climax of the fight, that it sounds like it and energy is there and you've built towards that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the big thing. It's about establishing a pattern of casting that means that people know when they should be excited. Because you can't trust people to know what they're watching.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it, like the acronym I use is KISS. It's keep it simple, stupid. Mm-hmm. And it kind of works both ways. It's like keep it simple because you're a stupid caster and you'll fuck up if you try and overcomplicate it.
Okay.
And keep it simple because the audience is stupid, which they're not. Like a lot of League of Legends fans know a huge amount more about the game than I do, but you have to play it to your lowest common denominator.
Yeah, I mean, just like we talk about, I know a big point is always talking about win conditions, the team fight, I mean, you need to play to your win conditions as well as a caster, and keeping it simple and executing on the things that you know you can, that you can do to make a good cast is also as important.
Oh yeah, 100%.
For the new folks, what was one of the biggest challenges you had to overcome as a caster, and then how did you get over that?
That's an interesting question. Like for me, I think my roticism is my biggest challenge. So that's, I've got a little bit of a lisp with S's, especially when I'm tired. And secondly, I have an inability to pronounce R's properly. So it's a very English thing, and a lot of people with an English accent have it. There's a very famous football commentator called Alan Smith in the UK who does all of the FIFA games and stuff. So you've probably heard his voice if you play FIFA. He has a problem with R's as well. And I think like I still haven't overcome it in terms like it's still definitely there and it still exists. I've taken elocution lessons to try and work on it, but it still crops up, especially when I'm tired and casting. And I think part of it was just accepting that that's part of who I am. Like, it's a little bit like Vedius with the whole, oh, Vedius is cringe, haha, et cetera, et cetera. You kind of have to just live with that as a caster. People are going to judge you and people are going to say, oh, you know, he could be, you know, I don't want to listen to him because he can't pronounce turret properly. Or I don't want to listen to him because whenever he says Baron, I think he's a child, you know. I put W's in places where they shouldn't be. But if I can make my casting good enough that people overlook that and don't care about that, then that's great. And I know there's a lot of people who don't even realize it happens. Like my producer in EU didn't know it. I had it until I mentioned it. And he was like, what's your biggest weakness? I've got, well, probably my roticism. He was like, oh, didn't realize you had one. Mm-hmm. It's like Zyrene didn't know I had it until I mentioned it on cast as well. So I think a lot of the time your biggest weakness is something that you will know about that other people don't realize. And you'll overanalyze it and you'll overjudge yourself for it. So as I said, like we're all hypercritical and people will probably go in saying, oh, you know, I'm really not good at this. And other people won't notice it. And if you think that you need to work on that, that's great. But it's important not to put too much stead into what you think your biggest weakness is, because you can get caught up in your own head. You can get to a point where you let it stop you from doing things. Because it would have been quite easy for me to say, I shouldn't cast.
Yeah.
Because like I've got a roticism, like people won't like my casting. It would have been very easy for DeFicio to say it. Because like you couldn't understand what he was saying. It made no sense. But now he's one of the best casters in the world, and I aspire to be at that level. I aspire to be greater than him. I think that you have to aspire to be better than the people you work with. And I don't think that's... I wonder if people would call that arrogant. I think maybe they would. I hope it doesn't come across as arrogant. No, I'm not saying I am greater than DeFicio. I'm not saying that I will become greater than DeFicio. I'm saying that I want to be better than him. I don't know how... Yeah. Pardon?
No, I was going to say it's not definitive. It is a... I guess expectation good word either.
It's an aspiration.
Yeah, there you go. That's right. We're just finding all the right words here.
Yeah, man. We're so good. But yeah, I think it's easy to get caught up in your own head about those sorts of things. And if you think it's important enough that you need to deal with it, go and reach out to someone and say, look, I really struggle with this. How can you help? I really struggle with that. How can I help? And like if people are listening to it, you're welcome to hit me up on Twitter or whatever and just message me and say, look, I really struggle with this. Or can you watch, you know, these 10 minutes of this mod and tell me what you would do differently? But I don't think there's ever a point where there's something that is so insurmountable that it should stop you from casting if you want to cast. It would have been very easy to not cast and just be a doctor. I decided not to do that. And it would have been very easy to not cast because I've got an accent, or not cast because I didn't want to move to Berlin because my girlfriend's in England, or not cast because there weren't any jobs in the UK scene after one of my friends got a full-time job with the ESL UK. But you just got to keep trucking, keep working on it. If you love it, you'll find a way.
Yeah. That's a really good message. And just another example of someone who had that mentality and is keeping on improving, like always staying hungry.
Yeah.
So let's see here. Opinions on color interjection during play-by-play?
I think it can be amazing. If it works properly, it can really like make the highlight moments pop. Mm-hmm. It's about the color meeting the level of excitement and being concise as well, because there are times when you need a color to have a few, like have a couple of lines because you're running out of breath or something, and that's a lot easier to do when you're in the same room and you can indicate to people. Because like if I need Vedius to, or I always use Vedius as my example, but if I need my color to interject, I'll like point at him and be like, please just give me something small so that I can come back in. But if you have a color who is willing to interject without distracting from the play-by-play, you can really make a moment pop. The issue comes when your color says something that changes your focus in a team fight, yeah. Because then you kind of like, if you're not quick on your feet, you can be distracted. So if you're a color, I'd recommend that you listen to what your play-by-play is saying and interject as an addition to that, unless the thing that you see is that much more impactful. Because I've had times when my color said, oh, look at Tristana, and it's like, yeah, cool, she's auto attacking. That's not what I care about. I care about the fact that Cho'Gath's about to nom the Xayah. Mm-hmm. So just make sure that you're in line with what your play-by-play is doing. But I think it definitely has a place and it can make a cast better. So I'd recommend working on it as a color and as a play-by-play.
Cool. Yeah, I've always wondered about that, and because I've seen sometimes definitely when even in Worlds, some of the pairings of the casting that like a color will interject and then you can hear it, like it stops the flow, right?
It throws the play by play. I think a part of that is that a lot of the Worlds pairings are people that don't work together regularly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you just need to be cognizant of what your play by play is doing.
For sure. Well, I mean, that's, I've always wondered about that, so I think we'll try to get some. Someone who does color primarily. Maybe we can get Vedius on here.
Yeah, hit him up.
Cool. Well,
I think Vedius just says whatever he's thinking. Like, I don't think he thinks about it. Just like, oh my god, I can't believe it. That's my Vedius impression.
Right, very nice. Very nice. Oh, I liked his, was he doing like a Welsh impression? In
oh, to God, that no. Was, don't encourage the Welsh action. Okay. Do not do it.
But then it's like
so
the puns.
Painful.
It's an alternative to puns. We can all be against the...
That's true. Yeah, we can all be against Vedius.
Yeah, be the sacrificial lamb. Yeah, very cool. Well, thanks so much for joining. I know this is like definitely longer than I was intending it to be, but I think it's because we had a lot of really great topics and learned a lot and wanted to like dive deeper into it. And appreciate you going into the detail and sharing all your secrets with us here.
No worries, man.
Very cool. Any shout outs? Where should people find you? And anything you want to tease at for next steps for you?
You can find me on Twitter. I'm at MedicCasts with two C's in the middle. I wish I could be at Medic. It was actually a really bad name choice, in all honesty, because I switched when I started with Riot from Sona. But yeah, I'd like it's so bad because you can't look me up on the internet. That's what I've discovered. Maybe that's a good thing. People can't flame me as much.
It's a
it's a blessing and a curse.
Aspiration. You will overtake the word Medic. It will be like
I doubt it, in all honesty. if I'm ahead of the Wikipedia entry, then something's going wrong in the world.
Yeah, I guess so.
Next projects, I'm doing Vainglory at the moment because I'm it's joy being freelance. I can do what I want. So I'm doing Vainglory, Evil 8 this weekend and over the next few weekends, and hopefully doing their world championships as well. So that's where I will be, and that is that's my tease. Awesome. It's not really a tease. I've just told you what I'm doing. Teasers are meant to be more mysterious than that. Ooh, no. Maybe I'm doing something with mobile esports.
Or am I?
Dun, dun, dun.
All right, awesome. Thanks so much. Cool. Awesome. Well, thanks, no worries, thanks, Medic. We had a great time here talking about casting and role of a caster. So thanks, guys, so much for listening. I'm going to throw this on to SoundCloud, and we'll link up all the stuff. I'll grab a link to the tournament that you're doing this weekend. Throw it on to social media as well, and along with this post, and I'll post a clip in the audio description as well. But guys, this has been Mushu Beef with broadcast.gg Office Hours Podcast. Thanks, Medic, and thanks guys for listening, and we'll see you next time. Thanks so much for listening to broadcast.gg Office Hours. If you liked what you heard, check out our other content on broadcast.gg and join our Discord with a link at the top of the page. We're a community of esports broadcasters improving by sharing our best practices, whether it be in shoutcasting, hosting, producing, observing, running tournaments, or anything that goes into making an esports broadcast happen. The music is by Glitch City. The link is in the description, or search Glitch X City in your search engine. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.